Processing Reality. This chapter on consciousness research questions the ontological validity of cultural, social, or moral conditioning and throws us back to apprehending our true soul values, both on an individual and a group level. Our first topic of inquiry is the question if the human mind is able to perceive the crude, unprocessed reality as is, or if it inevitably needs to process it. With other words, can we eat the soup of life without putting salt in it and without heating it up? Is it possible to perceive reality other than through the opaque filter of our conditioned mind? Can the mind be cleansed for better perception, or else altogether circumvented during the process of perception? Can perception be pure and undistorted in the sense of being direct and immediate? Before I try to give answers to these questions further down, let us first see the mechanism of our mind when perceiving reality. This implies the process of perception and also the question how the brain, as the long arm of our mind, handles the information which is received. It is today agreed upon among the majority of neurologists and consciousness explorers that the mind and the brain are both necessary in the process of perception. The mind is the larger framework and perceives the whole of reality, while the brain seems to be a functional unit of the mind, more involved with the actual information processing. Much is still open here, but one thing is sure: the mind and the brain are not what was thought still some decades ago one and the same thing. The mind can be imagined as the matrix and the brain as the processing device. But we must not functionally confuse them, as their roles in perception are clearly set by nature, and this was formerly a terra incognita in science and came to be known only by modern neurology in combination with the insights we gained from mind-opening and consciousness-transforming psychedelic experiences. This process of learning, if we want to understand it intelligently, can only be seen when we look at the totality of perception. Learning is the way we deal with what we perceive. It is a process of processing information, and this information is collected by our brain through a rather complicated process that we call perception. Thus, when we care about the process of learning, the way we learn, we need to look at what perception is and how it works. Perception is a topic not very broadly discussed in modern science. This obvious neglect of scientific in-depth study into the holistic process of perception has various reasons. The main reason is the general focus of modern science upon information processing. There was a historic shift around the end of antiquity that led to a trend away from direct perception and toward information processing, archiving, or mere information reproduction that I have called historical turn towards stupidity. That is why today we have collectively forgotten about direct perception. Yet this knowledge has survived in shamanism and with spiritual healers in South America, Asia, and Africa, and generally with native peoples. And it is part of a perennial spiritual tradition among sages in the East and the West. What then is direct perception? Direct perception is our natural and most intelligent mode of perception. It is perception that circumvents most of the information processing circuits and therefore leaves the incoming signal as untouched and intact as possible. New research has fully corroborated the teachings of the old sages, who said that learning has to be holistic and whole brain in order to be truly effective. To look deeper into these facts, we cannot get around the disturbing insight that since about the scientific doctrine of Aristotle and within Occidental culture, we have used our brains in the wrong way. You may laugh, but I am serious when I say that there is another abuse you haven't heard about yet. It's brain abuse. And it's a cultural thing. We as a culture have misused our brains, millions of brains in millions of people. We do that by educating children in the wrong way, in a way to systematically abuse of their brains, until they do it the way we other adults do it, by using only about 4 to 8% of their brain potential. Now, we hardly got time to sit around crying. I would say that there was never a better time for us as individuals, as a group, as a nation, as humanity, to really see this fact as it is and to work on the reformation of culture. To turn it upside down, so that the garbage falls out and all the wrong beliefs. How to turn culture upside down? By studying it deeply, thoroughly, with all our energy. This culture is in us, in our cells, in our brains, in our skin, in our stomachs. We cannot just vomit it out for being newborn as a tabula rasa. Metaphorically speaking, it's not by throwing bombs in McDonald's restaurants that you get free from the murder culture. It's by accepting all the ingredients of this culture. Thus, by going to a good restaurant, eating with good table manners and selecting fresh food, by using the napkin and patiently and lovingly teaching your children to do the same, you reform and transform culture. It's because you renew it by really absorbing it. What you do instead is to pay lip service to it and then go eat like a pig. And then, after a while of indulging in pighood, you wonder why your children become pigs. You think that when you let your children grow into a no culture, you give them freedom and options, right? Not so. You give them violence, chaos, and a no option mindset. Your children can only grow in culture, and that culture is your culture. Tell me in which culture they should grow if not in yours. So when I follow your logic, we both can only agree about this. Your children will grow in no culture. You do not teach them your own culture because you think it's a messy kind of thing, too violent, not really conscious, manipulative. Yes, it is all that. But you cannot turn the culture upside down by rejecting it. You can only turn it around by ingesting it and then, once you have also digested it, by overcoming it. When you know what culture is all about, you can choose another culture to live in. We can only wonder, when we hear scientists say that generally we use only 5 to 8% of our brain or creative resources. Why are we so terribly unproductive, so utterly ineffective in our creativity, in our performance, in our achievements? Despite this whole process called civilization, despite schools, colleges, and universities, despite the printing press, Gutenberg, and all the rest of it, we have remained in a truly primitive state of evolution regarding learning and understanding the learning process. The answer is simple. It's because we live without culture. And this in turn is so because, quite without reflecting about it, we have never really accepted that culture into which we were born and that is ours. I am not really concerned with finding out about the causes or reasons for this tremendous waste of opportunity, but well with the possibilities to change this state of affairs on an individual human level. The world changes through multiple and repeated changes on an individual level. Once a sufficient number of individuals have done their quantum leap to a higher evolutionary vibration, there will be a major paradigm shift in the whole system that makes that group or collective consciousness too will reproduce this shift on the group national or global level. This is how all true civilization comes about. All begins in the cell and then expands to bigger patterns. Nature is coded in patterns that are holistically related to each other and where the information of the whole is contained in every single cell of the pattern. The pattern structure is the model for the information the brain receives and stores. New information is added onto existing information. Without this kind of information routing, which is part of the brain's mechanism of information processing, that in neurology is called preferred pathways, memory would not be possible. The better the brain can manage to associate new input with existing patterns of information, the faster the information storage will be, and thus the higher will be the memorization result. Our brain does this intake of information automatically, passively, without a need for us to set a decision about it. This fact is tremendously important for the understanding of the functioning of the brain. There is namely a positive side and a negative side about it. Positively, the passively organizing perception structure of the brain ensures that we continuously receive and store information. We cannot shut off the brain. Even in coma or in deep hypnosis, we perceive and register all that goes on around us. All the information from the five, and I would correct, the six senses, is perceived and stored in the subconscious memory surface that never sleeps and that perhaps, at least in a condensed fashion, also survives death. So the apparently passive functioning of the brain is actually a vividly active process. The important point about it is that the organizer of the information is inside and not outside of the system. To give an example, let us have a look at two groups of children. The first group is raised permissively so that they can pick up any information freely from the environment and grow from the information they get into what they are individually destined for. The second group, however, is strictly regulated, protected, and warded off from any unprocessed information. Which group would you think will be more intelligent and more creative, the first or the second one? Of course, the first one, simply because in their case the freely organizing system of their perception and the free flow of information combined with high input will make their brains working on high gear from early age, whereas in the second group, creative learning processes are for the most part impaired, blocked, or even mutilated. In the first group, the organizer of the information is inside, within the children, while in the second group it is outside, and in the tutelary adults around the children, their parents and teachers for the most part, that are putting up valves for the free flow of incoming information, filtering out the larger part of it. We can also put it that way. In the first group, it is nature's intelligence that cares for the children's evolution. In the second case, it is limited and rather short-sighted human willfulness. This simple example shows the high impact the early environment has on the development of our intelligence and our later use of the potential that we've got. In my opinion, we all have got high or exceptional potential, but only very few of us were exposed to the right environmental support and have in addition developed the necessary creative will to free themselves from the dangers of conditioning. And we need both those factors working in a positive sense if we are to fully develop our talents and creative powers. Jay Krishnamurti, today recognized as one of humanity's most important spiritual teachers, was as a child constantly beaten in school by a stupid and ignorant teacher. His childhood was all misery and solitude, and he would probably have ended up as the village idiot if the theosophists had not discovered the boy and taken him to England, where he was educated under their patronage. Announced by seers as the new Messias, this boy was found at age 14 at a beach in Bangalore, South India, neglected, almost toothless, malnourished, and sad. Krishnamurti, as a little boy, rejected the knowledge he was supposed to assimilate. He rejected all of it, the whole of conditioning, societal, religious, moral, or whatever. And because of this refusal, he was treated with utter disrespect and violence, as so many children who, like him, prefer to remain in their original state of mind, which is pure and unspoiled, the mind of a totally conscious, direct observer. Krishnamurti learned by direct perception, and therefore his learning was immediate, perfectly spontaneous, and almost instantaneous, the whole brain learning of a genius. Direct perception is the key to using our hidden potential in hitherto unforeseen ways that allows us to bring about unusual capacities that we know only from people who are either called yogis or geniuses. However, we are all gifted with the spark of the divine and able to pass beyond the limitations of our conditioned mind.